Hi, welcome to the first Bangladeshi podcast where we have renowned guests from all over the world. I'll talk about business, politics, tech, and everything else that's trending worldwide. I'm your host Rafi, and let's get this show started. In this episode, we have with us Dr. Zachary Allen Isro from USA. He holds a PhD in humanities and is also a professor of humanities. He's an expert in self-help, Taoism, Buddhism, Western philosophy, and a lot of other things. Before we dive into details, Dr. Isro, can you please give us a brief introduction of yourself?
Sure, thank you for having me on this wonderful show. So, my background is varied, as you sort of touched upon there. I started my undergraduate studies in philosophy. I did a master's degree at the University of Chicago, where I really focused in on Taoism and sort of the dialogue between Western philosophers and their engagement in with Taoism and Buddhism and sort of the Eastern philosophical positions. One of my interests is how do we merge the two and find sort of the commonalities between them and take some of the Eastern ideas and move them into the West. And then I received my PhD in humanities with a specialization in philosophy and anthropology. And I am currently an assistant professor at Beacon College, and I sort of help run the humanities program there. And so, like you said, my interests are sort of varied, and I'm very excited to be on this show.
Right. So there's a lot of things we can talk about, but let's start off with a discussion in your field of expertise. You focus on philosophy and anthropology, but for those of us who are not aware of the term anthropology, can you give us a simple explanation of what it is and what big questions does anthropology hope to answer?
Sure. So anthropology is really a holistic science of the human being. And so what it's really interested in are three main things. We're interested in who are we as humans, meaning what does it mean to be a human biologically, looking at the evolution of the human being, who are we socially, culturally, etc. It looks at where did we come from, and that's tied in with that evolution and the evolutionary train of our being. And then we're interested in how, and more so why, are we different? What led to the cultural and social differences that we see? So in anthropology, we get four main fields, and there's many subfields, but we get linguistic anthropology, biological anthropology, social cultural anthropology, and then we can even get into some more specific fields in those, such as forensic anthropology, which is used in a lot of detective background and things like that, looking at the human being in a sort of a holistic sense.
So it's a very, very wide subject in science, anthropology, we can understand. So recently, you told me that you gave a talk titled, "No, You Don't Actually Know That." So can we know what that talk was about?
Yeah, so this was a talk I actually gave right here in Florida. And the idea behind this talk was to sort of showcase some of the misguided ways of thinking that we see today through social media and through a whole bunch of different types of politicization and all this kind of stuff that we see going on today. And so one of the things that I did was I looked at some big major headlines from contemporary news sites and that were sort of trying to bend the studies that they were based on. And so what I did was I showed those study titles and then I broke down the actual studies that they were based on to show why those titles are oftentimes misleading, even though most of us, when we're on social media or something, we see those headlines and we assume that what those are saying are true because we assume that who's ever writing these news articles has read the study and is presenting the information as the study presented it, and that's just not usually the case. And so it's a lot of based on a lot of this idea of fake news and fact checking that's popular right now.
Right. So what you basically did on that speech is, currently clickbait is one of those things that's on the rise. So the headlines make you believe one thing, but when you read the actual news, it's something else. And like you touched on the issue that based on any news, we are led to believe that they have done their research, but in reality, that is not the case. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We are always sort of trusting sources, even though many of the sources that we trust are not direct and directly connected to the actual study themselves. And so it's always better to go back ourselves to those studies and make sure that oftentimes, even these news online news sources with these fancy headlines, they'll have the links to the actual studies. And so you can actually go and fact check them yourself, but nobody ever does that. And so really, I'm encouraging everyone to click on those links and go find those studies that they're citing for yourself and really see if they're setting up the study correctly. Because even people who are doing these studies sometimes make mistakes. They don't eliminate all the bias that they can. They don't set up their study appropriately. And so it's always just good to go back to the original study and evaluate that study for yourself.
Right, so the best way to consume misinformation is to go for ourselves and fact-check whatever studies that it's linked to.
That's correct.
All right, so you're clearly a very well-decorated person with a deep knowledge in humanities. When did this start for you? What I mean by this is, was there a day or phase in your life when you got up and thought that I want to be an expert in all things humanities, anthropology, philosophy, like the backstory?
I think like most people in philosophy, there certainly is a sort of a moment in time that sort of pushes us towards this kind of line of thinking and this sort of lane of questioning. For me specifically, it was back in 2007, so about 13 years ago, I initially actually wanted to go into law. I know you mentioned that you have a background in law, and that's actually where I was headed. That was my direction. And I was actually on the beach of Lake Michigan. I was running. They have tons of sand dunes there, big hills just of sand, and I was running up and running down them and having a lot of fun doing that. And I actually fell. And I tripped on something, and I fell, and my back snapped over me, and I actually injured my back pretty bad. I actually broke it in two places.
Ouch.
And it was not fun, and unfortunately I was running down the opposite side, so I actually had to have my friend who was there help me up the hill again and back down the other side to get back to towards the beach side. And on the way back down there, we actually saw someone go under the water, and he actually ended up drowning. And we were there, and we watched it from start to beginning. And I remember very vividly seeing sort of the lifelessness in the body. And from there, I sort of just started to question meaning and purpose. And from questioning meaning and purpose, that sort of drove me into deeper philosophical questions about human nature, and that's sort of where I'm at today.
So it all started from one traumatic experience where you witnessed someone's life just going away.
Yeah, really.
That's unfortunate that it happened, but it did lead you here, so everything happens for a reason, I guess. So now let's move away from the technical discussions for a while and explore the simpler things in life. So I know you're a professor in Beacon College, which is in Florida, by the way, for those of you who are not aware. So what is it like being a professor and mentoring all these young minds in a field that you're very passionate about?
I mean, it's a great experience for me, because when you see someone go from, especially in my field, which is deeply complex, and it takes a long time to fully grasp some certain ideas in my field, and to see someone go go from the introductory level courses in my field and then having them for their whole time in their education up until they get to writing their final thesis and defending it, and then just seeing that transition from entering and being confused and not being sure about what's going on to being confident and having deep thoughts. It's just this wonderful transition. And Beacon College specifically is a college that exclusively serves students with learning disabilities. And so for our students in particular, watching them make that transition is just, it's one of the most rewarding experiences, I believe.
Amazing. Being a professor is obviously one of the most respected careers you can be in. Plus, Beacon College is sort of a special college. They teach special children. So it's even more rewarding to see all these people just, learn and grow in these specific fields. And I've done my research on you for a few days, and it is extremely complex from what I could see. I couldn't understand half the things. So it's really amazing to see all these minds, you know, growing in this field. So moving back to the technical stuff again, you wrote a monograph. So is a monograph the same thing as a book?
Yes, yes.
All right. So you wrote a monograph titled The Spectricity of Humaneness, Spectral Ontology and Being in the World. The title clearly is a mouthful, and many of us can't grasp all of the words. So can you please educate us on what this is about?
Sure. So this is actually my forthcoming book. It's in press, so it takes a little while to come out, but it is a mouthful. It's called The Spectricity of Humaneness, Spectral Ontology and Being in the World. So I sort of have been working on this for a long time, even before I really ended up in college and going for everything. You know, I started basic ideas for this book when I was 15. They sort of started forming. And it's rooted in the philosophy of a guy by the name of Martin Heidegger, a German philosopher who wrote a major book called Being in Time. And Being in Time is all about the way in which we interact and engage with the world around us. But at the same time, one of the problems with Heidegger's way of thinking is that because it's all about the way we engage with the world, he believes that only the human being engages with the world in such a way that actually gives them a world to engage with. So animals and objects in the world, they're not relational in the same sense that we are. They don't have a world per se. And I personally don't agree with that. And so what I've done in my book is I've created a sort of spectrum of being in which we have three different categories. You have beings, which is everything that exists, right? Anything from the smallest bacteria to the largest organism, you know, blue whales.
Right, right.
And so you have beings, and then you have something called hyper-beings, which is actually a concept I borrowed from Timothy Morton, who's a brilliant thinker. And these are things that sort of extend their existence throughout time. They're sort of everlasting in a sense. Things like climate change, they're more like concepts, they're not beings. They don't have a physicality to them, but nevertheless they engage with and they affect the beings that are in the world.
Okay.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, the last side of the spectrum, you have what I call, they're non-beings or spectral beings. And these are things that I like to term aptitudes. And humanness is one of those. And so the book is really all about this spectral entity of humanness and how it affects our development into what we are.
Right. So this book is, this sounds very technical and, to be frank, a bit complicated. So for us everyday people who don't know much about anthropology and your field in general, would you suggest this book or would you suggest some other book before we read your book? Something so that we can, we can grasp what this anthropology is about and everything.
So I said one of the best beginner sort of best written anthropological texts about the history of the development of human beings is Gunstrings and Steel by Jared Diamond. It's a book that sort of looks at how humans have developed the way they have and what the underlying conditions for that development is in different places. And it's just a good sort of easy book for people who have, you know, no background and are just sort of interested in beginning to dive into this topic.
Great. I'll definitely be reading that because I did a bit of research with anthropology, and this is something that I'd definitely be interested in, honestly. So moving on to Taoism. As far as I'm aware, this is an ancient Chinese religion that focuses on health, refinement, genuineness, and things like that. But a lot of us are not familiar with Taoism. So will you please educate us about what is Taoism and how are you involved with it?
Tao, as a literal translation into English, is way or path. Infinite sort of force type thing that moves the world the way that it moves. So everything is part of the Tao. Everything that happens is sort of determined by the movement of the Tao. And the idea of Taoism is to be one with or to follow the Tao. And you do that through several means, but one of the more important ones is through a concept called Wu Wei. And Wu Wei literally means inaction or without effort. And to act without effort in Taoism doesn't mean to do nothing, but specifically means to not do anything that is already sort of against the natural way of things that are going to unfold. So don't exert yourself against the natural order of things, because ultimately, according to Taoism, that's a waste of your effort, because if that's the way things are going to unfold, it's going to happen regardless of your effort against it. And so you're just sort of wasting your energy. And so you're better off directing your energy towards something in the direction of the natural order. And that's sort of the basic principle of following the Tao.
Right. So from the listeners, if anyone wants to go into a deep dive in humanities like you did, what would your advice be for them? Like, how complicated is this field and what should they be ready for?
I mean, there's nothing about it that is necessarily complicated. It's about approaching it in the right way and with the right attitude. You know, I mean, in the humanities, there's a lot of reading and it's a lot of times it's abstract, but there's always ways to apply these abstract ideas and apply them into our world. And so I think it's easy to, or at least it's more beneficial to try to start by looking at things that are a little bit more applicable to our everyday life. So starting with things like ethics and social and political theory. So if you're interested in starting in the humanities, if you start looking at questions about ethics, which is one of the branches of philosophy, or looking at political philosophy, you're dealing with some of the more complicated philosophical topics, but because they're applicable to our everyday life in a more readily accessible way. I mean, we experience ethical dilemmas in our everyday life, we experience politics in our everyday life. So because it's more applicable to our everyday experience, it tends to be easier to pick up on right off the bat rather than some topics in ontology or metaphysics that seem a little bit more disconnected from our everyday lived experience. So starting in something like ethics or political philosophy or even social theory is probably a little bit of a better grounding experience. And then depending on interest, you can always move forward into questions about free will and the nature of religion and things like this and more metaphysics. But I think that that's harder to start from right away.
Right. So I have one final question before ending the show, and that is, how has the quarantine period affected your workflow?
I think like teachers and professors all over, we had to switch to online education, and while there's nothing inherently wrong about online education or bad about online education, it's certainly a different way of doing education. And I think being able to adapt to online education, especially on such a short notice, was definitely a challenge, especially when you have a lecture style like I do, which is very engaging, and I like to discuss in my classes. I don't like to just stand for 2 hours and talk at my students. I like to have them talk a lot and engage with the material and engage with real-world questions about the material. And that's much harder to do online, especially when you have students from around the world who are living in different time zones, and they don't always have the time to engage with you live on Skype or anything, or on Zoom or whatever platform you're using. So it's definitely a different approach to education. But I think going forward, you know, assuming that online education is sort of here for a little while, and at least it might end up being more and more popular, I think it's just important to make sure that you sort of keep that engagement level as much as you can, and especially in the fields of philosophy and anthropology, where really engaging with these is much more useful than just being given the information. It's not like a lot of fields where you can know the information and then you can go out and apply it. You have to be able to do you have to be able to think in a certain way and reason in a certain way in order to really digest a lot of the material and philosophy. And so engaging with it is really the best way to do it. So as long as we can keep that engagement level while we're doing and switching to the online education, I think that that's sort of the most important thing for the way forward.
Right, so it's certainly challenging a bit, but it's nice to see that you've adapted to it and you're still connected with all your students and everything. So before we finish this, can you tell everyone where to find you in social media or read your publications and anything else you might want to add?
Sure, so my forthcoming book is coming out with De Gruyter Press in probably 2021, by the time it gets out from press. But my publications can be found pretty easily. You know, if you just Google my name, I mean, they will pop up. And if you're interested in learning more about philosophy or Taoism or mindfulness in general, I also do mindfulness and meditation coaching. Feel free to reach out to me that way.
Right. I'll obviously keep all your links in the show notes below. Thank you very much, Dr. Isro. It's been a pleasure having you. I'll of course keep in touch with you, and I'm really excited to see all the new papers and your new book that you come up with.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much. We'll speak again soon. Thank you everyone for listening to this episode. If you're interested in being a guest, go to my website and you'll find the process there. If you want me to discuss a certain topic, there's a suggestion form on the website as well. Hope you all like this episode. Peace.